the Gemara gives as an example of a bracha that you make on Birchas HaRechem, fruit, and one smells an esrog. So one would have thought that's the simplest example. You smell an esrog, smells delicious, wonderful. And then when you start to look at the Rishonim, it becomes the most complicated example, because maybe in the olden days, esrogim were a common phenomenon throughout the course of the year. For us, those of us don't come into contact with esrogim, shrove sukkis. So the question becomes, if a person smells an esrog on sukkis, is there any reason to believe that one doesn't recite a bracha? So we left off yesterday with a little bit of an introduction to the Shaila. Who says that you're allowed to even be spelled yesterday in the first place? We have a rule of Huktzah Mitzvoso. When something is designated for a Davosho Mitzvah, you're not supposed to use it for your own private things. So here we pointed out the Gemara Sukkah says that doesn't always apply. That the only time there's a rule of Huktzah Mitzvoso, that means that when you set aside something for a mitzvah, so the primary physical hanos that would otherwise be associated with that item are off limits, but the secondary hanos are somehow not included in that Esrog of Huktzah Mitzvoso. That's the Lashna Gemara. So therefore, when you have an Esrog, the primary use of an Esrog is eating the Esrog. And therefore, nochanami, when you use it for a mitzvah, you're not allowed to eat it. After sukkah is over, you're allowed to eat it. The next day, you're allowed to eat it. But that day itself, you're not allowed to eat it once you use it for a mitzvah. So if you want to use your esrog at Hoshana Rabbah, then make it into jam for the Hoshana Rabbah Suda, that you can't do. But if you want to smell the esrog, that's okay. Because since smelling is not the primary, no, that was never included in the Huktzah Mitzvah. So in contrast to Hadas, which in fact, you're not allowed to smell once you use it for a mitzvah, because that's the only use that you would ever have, the only private use it would have, and that is in fact Huktzah Mitzvah. That's the Gemara says. So there doesn't seem to be an Isser involved in smelling this esrog. The question is there any other reason to believe that one wouldn't recite a bracha on this? So, l'chora, we have to plug in the regular rules of Besamim. When do you and when do you not recite Birchas HaReach? So we saw that there was a klal already that the Rosh put together. Toys already started a little bit, the Rosh elaborated a little bit. This idea that if you're smelling something, that the primary reason that you're using is not really for smell. You're using it for some other reasons. Either you're using it to provide a smell, but not to provide an enjoyable smell that you should, some unbelievable aroma to smell. But rather, it's producing a smell to get rid of a bad smell. So that was the example that the Gemara in the 8th parak, that you don't make a barim nebisam on besam shel besakisei. And that's what ties in the Rosh about the same idea, is that if you're taking a food to eat, and your really goal is to eat it, and just happens to, by derech, smelling it, that's not called dasa l'reach, that's not called taking l'reach, and therefore you wouldn't recite a bracha. So the chora, if you plug that into the tilas l'uvin esrog, you would have the following conclusion. Let's say a person picks up l'uvin esrog to shake. His goal is to fulfill the mitzvah of on the first day, their isa, the subsequent days, their abana, and kachabi, and marisha, and the smach, he's about to do the mitzvah of l'uvin esrog. And as he's standing there shuffling with his kavanah, saying his yiratzons, all of a sudden, wow, haka, nice smell. You don't have to recite Shadasa Rechta Paris. Why? Because that would be the halach equivalent of take it le'achila, and just derech agav, there was a smell. So here I didn't take it for achila. Here I took it l'shem mitzvah. So my goal was l'shem mitzvah. And derech agav, there's a nice smell, there's not going to be a bracha. So I don't need the Mordechai to discuss that. I don't need the Risham. I already know a rush. I already learned that yesterday. That if your goal is to take it for the mitzvah, that's like taking it for achila, and you're not going to make a bracha. But remember the Rosh's lashon yesterday. The Rosh said, what if a person takes for both reasons? A person takes a nice fruit, say in the middle of July, he picks up a nice, sweet-smelling fruit. He wants to eat it, but he wants to get a geshmak out of the reich also. So the Rosh said, you would make a bracha. You make two brachas. Make a bracha on the smell, and a bracha on the eating. So l'chora, if a person takes the l'uvin esrog for two purposes, number one, he's taking it for the mitzvah, but he also is taking it for toras the smell. So l'chora, if you plug in the regular rules from the Hilchos Brachos from yesterday, the regular rules that govern Birchas HaReach, you should recite a bracha. L'chora, that's what the din should be. So the Mordechai quotes about Chalik Sivisharim about this. So the Mordechai quotes from one of the Rishon Rabbeinu, Simcha says that you don't do that. You know, that's it, finish. You don't make a bracha under those circumstances. Not everyone agrees. Rabbeinu Simcha says, no, you don't make a bracha. Why don't you make a bracha? Well, what's the svara of Rabbeinu Simcha? So l'chora, when the Mishnah Berurah seems to present, that l'chora, what the svara of Rabbeinu Simcha is that it's almost a throwback to the first rule. Namely, that when I take something really, really for another reason, my really primary goal is for reason A, which is not a reachdik, a reason. Let's say my primary goal is really achila. And then just kind of secondary, a reach sneaks its way in there so that I don't make a bracha. So if I take a fruit in the middle of July that has a good smell and a good taste, and I hindi mukhum zu take it for both, so there is no primary kavana, there's no primary tila, I'm taka taking it for both. So then reach triggers a brichas a reach, eating it triggers a brichas a chila and shoyin. But what if it is so obvious, it is so clear why I'm doing what I'm doing? So even though, yes, I'm saying I'm doing it for both, but come on, who are you kidding? What's the real reason? It's not even a shot, not even a question why you're doing it. So it's very obvious to figure out. How much did you spend on this esrog exactly? Starting, $150, I don't know. You spent a lot of money on this esrog. It's an inexpensive esrog. $300, $500, a chazeh. I only smell, I'm very machmer, only smell things that come from the Chazanish's paradise. That's a very, very machmer on that. So come on, are you joking? And it's only on Sukkot, by the way. Next week, don't keep these things far away from me. So what are you joking? No, I'm really taking it for two reasons. I'm taking it for briskater, the two didim. I'm taking it for the mitzvah and for the smell. Come on, says Rabbeinu Simcha, give me a break. Obviously, this is your, clearly 999% of your kavanah is real l'shem mitzvah. So even though this is not exactly the same as the Achila story, this is also the Hanor of Rech that you're getting is really Batla Mufuto. It says the Mishnah Berurah, if that's the case, what would the halacha be as follows? Let's say a person took the Luvin Esrog and he did the mitzvah and he shined and he's done, he puts it down. So then 5 minutes later he comes back and he says, you know what? Oh, it's not going to smell good before. Let me get another good shmek out of the Esrog. So says the Mishnah Berurah, let's make another bracha. Like, why not? It's not like an esrog. It's a din in the chefze. Esrog is mufka for birchas areach. Why? For us? Just because it's a davar shel mitzvah. Remember we said yesterday that's not huktzel a mitzvah. So you're allowed to smell it. So says the Mishnah Berurah, if you're allowed to smell it, so then the only way to explain or make a simcha why you wouldn't make a bracha is only because it must be that your kavanas reach is really batel mevutel. That's true if and when you're doing it at the same time as the mitzvah. But if you already did the mitzvah already, or you're not planning it, you're going to daven later. It's 7 o'clock, you're going to daven at 9 o'clock. You're a brisker, you follow the Shulchan Aruch, you take your Luvin Esrog for Halel, you don't do it in the Sukkah like that, Riyak Kodesh. So you're nowhere near doing the mitzvah. But right now you want to get a little bit of a nice smell, a little bit of a kick in the morning. So says the Mishnah Berurah, if you're taking an esrog to smell, clearly not in the context of making of doing the mitzvah, chari should make a bracha. And he quotes the Machlerim and say, no. Esrog shall mitzvah, according to the Mishnah, aim a bracha, finish, gemanu. It's hukta, no mitzvah, so not really, it doesn't really. That's it. We're not mitzvahs to the reach. So it's a little bit unclear what the din is. So the minig Yisrael probably should be to avoid the shayla. But the poskim quote that the better thing is really not to smell an esrog on sukkahs. If you smell an esrog on sukkahs, you run into all kinds of different shaylas. And yet there are many, many great people, especially great women, who they smell the esrog. That's it. Mr. Walter, you've seen that? And the women, it's like almost like part of the mitzvah. You take it, you shake it, and then until you smell, you're not yotzei. So you have to smell the esrog. That's my grandmother when she would shake the. That's what she did. They did in Poland. And that's what they did in America. And in China, Abias Goel, Adonai Bechlal, they smell. So even though if you look at the simple pshat and halacha, it's probably better to avoid the smelling of the esrog, because smelling the esrog, you ask you for trouble in terms of a bracha.
Why didn't the Gemara bring that up? Where is the mother to benefit from it? Why didn't the Gemara bring up this?
I wasn't talking about the topic. I wasn't talking about the topic.
Once you did the mitzvah already, then who would ever say they were picking it up again for the mitzvah? Now you're only picking it up for
right.
The
reyach.
Right, and this suffix doesn't have come.
That's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes, but he quotes other Rechmarim who say, Semel, it's a mitzvah tik esrog, it lost its reyach. I don't know, not sure. It's unclear why.
What was the reason for why we said you should make a bracha on it?
Why you should? Because it's like anything else. Like none of these sfaras appear in the Gemara. So most of the Rishon probably said, you do make a bracha. The Mordechai quotes one day from Minas Simcha became the popular shita, you don't make a bracha. Pasha Pshad, you do, he quotes the Rav Yosef, so you do. Okay, everybody says, so there's one last part of the sugya about Birchas Harech that actually has absolutely nothing to do with Birchas Harech. What a great surprise that we should focus on a topic that has nothing to do with anything. But here, don't blame me, here the Rishonim did it. Here, Mamash Rishonim took the leisure, the opportunity of discussing a sugya that has really nothing at all to do with Maseches Brachos. It's actually much more chulin-oriented than Brachos-oriented, but it's a fascinating topic that appears in the Rosh, appears in the Rishonim, appears in the Shulchan Aruch. This topic doesn't appear in Shulchan Aruch Yoreh Deh. It appears in Aruch Chaim in the Siman about Rabbi Yechzkel Peiros, but it's a critical shayl halacha l'maisa, and it really begins in our sugya. So the Gemara gives us a list of different kinds of things that smell nicely. And again, we spoke about yesterday that there are some things that find it in. There are some things you recite about Atze B'Samim, some things you recite about Isve B'Samim, some things about Mir B'Samim, some you say Rechta V'Peiris. You have your array of different brachas. And in the middle of this mix, so the Gemara talks about musk. That called the Gemara, so Vachal and Barmit Atze, it's actually musk. What is this musk? What is this fancy perfume, this fancy smelling item called musk? So the Gemara says, Shemen Chayu Shavachal and Barmit B'Samim. So what exactly does that mean? So the Rishonim give you different interpretations what exactly this item is. And Ruba the Rishonim assume that it's as follows, the way the Rosh describes it, that V'nachin Yaiser, the 10th of the Rabbi Kormus, the 3rd line from the top, Shechai Yaduhi Shiesh Lachate Teres B'Tzavara. It's a certain kind of an animal, a wild animal, that has almost like a hump in its neck. It's not like a camel hump, but it has like a big gland or something that's enlarged in its neck. And from the veterinarian angle here, so it has something like a blood that's collecting in this area. And then somehow this item, Hocus Pocus, Hashem Baruch Hu created, that becomes a very, very sweet smelling type of a thing. And it was a very very popular perfume in the olden days. Anyone knows what its official name is of musk? Musk, yeah, that's the official name, okay? So if you Google musk, you'll get a very nice picture. I've got a nice picture of it. Okay, it's a beautiful picture. It's like some kind of an antelope or something. You want to read us a little bit about musk?
Yeah,
it happened to me also first. Yeah, so just go for number two. The more popular musk. Musk perfume.
It's a type of deer.
It's
kind of a deer. Musk deer. And what does it say about it? Give me Wikipedia on it quick about the perfume.
One of the family of.
I think we said
lives in Tibet, India, Nepal, Pakistan, Afghanistan.
We saw on the Wikipedia page. The Wikipedia page quotes the Gemara and Brachos.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. Anyway, all right, bottom line is it has some kind of a gland. It comes from the gland or something?
It includes glandular secretions from animals such as the musk deer, numerous plants emitting similar fragrances, and artificial substances with similar odors.
The real stuff.
Gland of a musk deer.
Gland of a musk deer. The chatatera sheish barosh.
It's called tincture.
The
who? The aroma of the tincture gives a pleasant odor.
Okay, good. All right, bottom line, so it's musk, okay? So what's the grandiose shayla? So it's not a tree, it's not a grass, so it's not a fruit. So by default, we're going to make a bor mine b'samim. What's the shayla? The shayla is all of a sudden the Rishonim decide to raise another shayla. Nothing to do with sugya. I have this musk in front of me. It smells delicious, and I want to eat it. I imagine it probably tastes pretty decent also. What's the din? Are you allowed to eat it or not? What? Who, what, where?
What does it look like?
There's some secretion that comes out of the gland. Liquid, yeah. That's what it is. No, some kind of a liquid. So the shayla is, you allowed to eat it or not? So comes the Rosh and quotes that there was somebody showed him, there are different yourselves who said this exactly. I think the correct yourself is the Ramah. The Ramah Halevi, haya oisel ochlo b'chashash dam. So the Ramah says that he thinks that it's strafe, thinks it's not kosher. You know why? Because it's blood. It's basically blood that has been transferred. It doesn't look exactly like blood now, but it started out as blood, and it got mixed in with other secretions, other body, whatever it is, and therefore it has a shame dam on it. And it's also needed. It's also isa deraisa of dam. That's what the Ramah said. Hayachayshish chashash dam. Was 100% sure. He suspected there would be an issue of eating an ounce dam. Rabbeinu Yoina zal piresh, and Rabbeinu Yoina said, "No, I don't think so." The efshal mita botam lahatir. So the Rabbeinu Yoina said that he thinks that it's butter. The lomu de pirshavi almahu. He says he doesn't think that it's halachli like dam. He thinks it's like any other, like perish, like the feces of an animal. It's not treif. It's because it comes out of the animal. It's not shaykh to the animal itself. So he says the fact that this is coming out of the animal, that in of itself is not a problem. And the fact that at one time it was dam, that's also not a problem. Says it's true, Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing on the science, that at one time this mixture, the secretion had blood in it, but right now it doesn't look like blood. The Boso Hashta is Linan. He said there's a halacha that if you have a davar osur and it's undergone a significant change, so then you follow what it is now and you don't care what it was 6 months ago. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. It's called an Issa Shenishtana. So all of a sudden, we have a major machlekes rishonim, a sugya that belongs absolutely not in brachas, so much more of a chulim sugya. You have a davar also shenishtana. You have a treifa item that undergoes some significant change. It doesn't look the same anymore. The Ramah says it doesn't matter. If it came from treif, it's treif. And according to Rabbi Yon, he thinks that's going to be mutter. What's Rabbi Yon's raya? So it means a very, very strange raya. Rabbi Yon says... So Rabbi Yehuda is addressing an age-old problem that already Tosafot Maseches Avodah Zarah realized, that the Gemara has a whole discussion about honey. Why is honey mutter? Honey is definitely mutter. Why is it mutter? Why should it have been usher? So the Gemara says, maybe it should be usher. It's like a yotzim and an usher, because it's being produced by the bees. A bee is trade. Bee is a share. It's a shrotzim. You're not allowed to eat a bee. It's an insect. So the honey that's being produced by the bee should be like milk being produced by an animal. The same way the Mishnah says in Chulin, the Mishnah says Mechayr is a yotzim and an usher. So milk that comes from a chaz, milk that comes from a camel is trade. So to the honey that comes out of bees should be traced. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. That the way the bees produce the honey, that's not considered to be the equivalent. Why is that exactly? It's not 100% clear. The Gemara quotes a pasuk, Gemara quotes a svar, whatever the case is. Bottom line is, bees' honey is kosher. That we assume. So comes Tyson and says that, wait a second, even though it's true, the honey itself is kosher, but in any given scoop of honey, they're going to be some things that are treif. What is going to be treif for the honey? So again, I'm not holding too much in the details of honey, but Tosfos claims that there are going to be parts of the bees that get stuck in there. Sometimes you get a little bee gets crushed up inside the honey. You get little bees' legs or something floating around. Maybe we shouldn't talk about this, but Tosfos raises the question that maybe there are parts of the bees proper that are inside the honey, so we have to treif up the honey because of those, the ends of the bees. So a bit of time gives you a whole reason why. It's not really part of the bees, it's not the meat of the bees, it's the bones of the bees. It gives you a whole shtickel there. So Rabbi Yona gives you a different word. Rabbi Yona says that when the bees get stuck inside the honey and it starts to decompose inside the honey, and now I'm eating the honey on Rosh Hashanah 6 months later, so it's true there was bees stuff in there, but they've so changed, they become almost like honey, they become like swallowed up by the honey, they become completely nishtana. So therefore, argues Rabbi Yona, and Issa Shel Nishtana is mutter. So he says, just as we all know, you're allowed to eat the honey, even though there are treif of pieces in there that have undergone some kind of a change, so too, you're allowed to eat the musk, because it's undergone some kind of a change as well. That was Rabbi Yona's raya. So the Rosh says about this raya, v'nira daha filo rayoso tzricha raya. He says that his raya needs a raya. He says, who says he's right about that? He's bringing it, Rabbi Yona's saying, I'll prove to you that I'm right because of the following. So the Rosh says, I don't even know whether the following is right. So if the following is not right, then your raya is not a valid raya. So it's Archian. So at the end of the day, Rabbi Yehuda is very, very convinced that Issa Shel Nishtana is mutter, and the Ramah is not convinced, the Rosh is not convinced, and bottom line, it's a machlokes harishonim. So this machlokes presented itself in a totally different area of halacha, also about the musk. In what context? So concerning the Shemen HaMishcha. So the Torah says that you have to take certain ingredients and mix them together, and you mix them, you boil them, you make them into the Shemen HaMishcha, and then you use the Shemen HaMishcha for multiple purposes. So the days of the Mishkan, they use this to be Mashiach, the Mishkan and the Kelim. Every Kli in the Mishkan required Mashiach HaShemen HaMishcha. In subsequent generations, then you don't do that. Subsequent generations, you don't do Mashiach on the Kelim, you just do Avod. You start doing the Avodas HaKabanas, and that's Makadosh. But in the days of the Mishkan, Mishachem HaKadosh Osam, so those Kelim, the Kli HaMishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu, required actual Mashiach HaShemen HaMishcha. Then there's a din that the Kohen Gadol requires Mashiach HaShemen HaMishcha. Then that's the Gemara raised the question, what do you do after there was no Shemir Mishcha? In the days of Yoshiyahu, so he realized that the Goyim were going to soon destroy the Beis HaMikdash, so he didn't want the Shemir Mishcha to be taken. It was the same Shemir that had been made in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, so he wanted to preserve it for eternity. So he was going as it. So he hit it with the Aron. Wherever you find the Aron, so you'll find the Shemir Mishcha. So what did they do in Bayi Sheini? They didn't have Shemir HaMishcha, so how do you have a Kohen Gadol? So the Gemara derives from Sukkim. What? Begadim, yeah. The Gemara says that in the absence of Shemir HaMishcha, you could become a Kohen Gadol by just simply putting on the eight begadim. You put on the eight begadim, you do the avodah as a Kohen Gadol, so hocus pocus, you become a Kohen Gadol. So there are very, very small differences lahalacha between a Kohen HaNimshach with Shemir HaMishcha and a Kohen HaMerub Begadim, to Mishnah Maseches Megillah. But for all practical purposes, the Kohen Gadol becomes a full-fledged Kohen Gadol. So the Shemir HaMishcha was very, very important at different stages in history. It was used, again, originally in the Mishkan, and then it was used throughout history to be Mashiach the Kohen Gadol. Then the Gemara says also, it's also used to be Mashiach Malachim, that a Melech is also Nimshach B'Shemir HaMishcha, but only under certain conditions. Only if it's a Melech HaMachos based David. If, let's say, you have some other kind of a king, let's say you have some temporary kingdom like the Seres HaShvatim, so even though those kings were except by Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave nevuahs to anoint, to appoint some of those kings. Those kings were not anointed with Shemir HaMishcha. They were anointed with a different kind of an oil, Shemir HaFarsimah, just a plain, simple kind of, like put some oil on the head. It wasn't the official form of Shemir HaMishcha. So the Gemara says, these are all halach mashtzineh, these are all traditions that we have, that the Shemir HaMishcha is only allowed to be used for the Klei HaMishcha, for the Kohen Gadol, for a Melech HaMachos Beis David. Then the Gemara says that even a Melech HaMachos Beis David, you don't always use the Shemir HaMishcha. You don't use it if it's a ben acha ben. Let's say when David dies and his son takes over, so you don't have to do b'shich b'shemir mishcha. The only problem is the Gemara says b'medim amamurim that a melech ben melech doesn't require mishicha. That's if there's no machlokes. Everybody agrees to the dynasty, to the lineage. But if there's some kind of a big fight and no one knows who the next king's going to be, so then it is mutter. Then you're mechurf to use shemir. And he's all. If you use the Shemir HaMishcha when you're not supposed to, so you're chayev kares. So this is not like a game. Like we'll use a suffik l'chumra. You have to make sure you follow the dinim. So the Gemara at the beginning of Harius gives you all the clothes, all the details that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. What is a justified usage of the Shemir HaMishcha? So the Gemara says that we have a tradition that if it's a melech ben melech, you don't use the mishicha unless there's a machlokes. That's what the Gemara says. If you look at the Pesukim of Melachim, that's why they did anoint Shlomo ben Melech, because there was a fight between him and Adoniyahu, the other son, he thought he's going to take over the Malchus. Beginning of Sefer Melachim. So B'Pnei Adoniyahu, they were Mashiach Shlomo ben Melech. And then throughout Sefer Melachim, sometimes they were, sometimes they weren't, depending on whether it was a clear transition of power. So the Meches Chinuch has a fascinating shaila about this din, that the din is midaraisa, you have to be Mashiach whenever there's a machlok, yes? But if it's a melech ben melech, then you don't. So he has the following shaila. He wants to know what's going to be the din liyasa lovo when Mashiach's going to come. So he's a ben acha ben from David HaMelech. So he's going to require Mashiach ona. In order to make him into a melech, we're going to have to halachically appoint him some to see melech a melech. So first he's going to come, he has to first prove that he's royal lekach. So the Rambam writes at the end of Sefer Melachim that when a person comes and he announces that he's Mashiach, so a few conditions have to be met. First of all, he has to have the right prerequisites. He's got to have the right, he's got to have the appropriate on his resume. Every time the guy walks in and says, I've been Mashiach, so that's not going to work. So what are some of the requirements? He has to be a Tamid Chacham, and he's got to be a Tzaddik, he's got to be the son of David HaMelech. So he has to have all the things that make it look like he's at least a candidate to be Mashiach. And then he has to start to do things that are indicative of what Mashiach does. So the Rambam writes that he does certain things, and then you strongly suspect that he's on the right track. And then at the very end, when he gets the entire job done, then you know for certain that he's Mashiach. What's the entire job? So he has to be Leichem Mechabes Hashem, and he has to be Mechabes Tzidchei Yisrael, he has to be Bnei Beis HaMikdash, he has to do everything that are associated with Yemos HaMashiach. If he's the right guy, he had the right credentials, and he got the job done and everything, then and only then you know he's Mashiach. And if he fails, so then the Rambam says, then you know he's a Mashiach Sheker. So the Rambam, we had many, many of those along the years. So anyone who doesn't complete the job, doesn't get the whole thing done, so then you know for a fact that he never really is Mashiach in the first place. So the Birchas Chinuch writes that when the Melech Mashiach is finally going to come, we're going to have to ultimately declare him to be the Melech, so we're going to fulfill the mitzvah once again of Sumtus in Melech HaMelech. So he has a Shaila, are we going to be Mashiach and B'Shem HaMishchana? What's the Shaila? So on the one hand, he's a descendant of David HaMelech, he has a Chet Megez Yisha, he's a descendant of David HaMelech. On the other hand, there was a Machlokes at one point. What was the Machlokes? that the Sesa Shvatim didn't accept the descendants of David HaMelech. So now he's going to come, everyone's going to accept him. So is that called the Machlaikis? Is that called the Machlaikis? Is that considered to be like a direct descendant that wouldn't require Mashiach? Or is that somebody who's like, came Acha Machlaikis that would require a Sofek in the Mechaz Chinuch? So he says, he's not sure. He tells us, we'll figure out what to do at the time. I thought it's a little strange that it's a little bit of a downer. His name is Mashiach. Don't we call him Mashiach? Does that sound like he's anointed? I thought it was a good riot that we call him Melech HaMashiach. So the Chassidim says, no, that's Lav Dafka. If he did, he's not. You could just see a big machlek is breaking out. The Chassidim have snagged him. That the Chassidim say, of course we have to do Mashiach. It's Melech HaMashiach. What's that? Suffolk, the Suffolk Mashiach, Suffolk Mashiach Lachumra, Suffolk Mashiach Lachula, it's not clear. What he does, everyone will figure out what the din is. But back to that story. So, the Mashiach B'Shem Ramishcha has to be done properly. You have to make the Shem Ramishcha perfectly. If you take Shem Ramishcha and you try to replicate it, let's say, I try to make my own private Shem Ramishcha, and I follow all the ingredients, so that's called Mefatim Es HaShemens, you have courage for that. But let's say I take the original shemen and I use it for some other purpose, not for the halachically required mishichos, some chayv kares. There are two different isur by shemen mishcha. There's an isur of mefatim mis hashemen, and there's an isur of sach b'shemen. So the isur of sach b'shemen is sach in the original shemen of Moshe Rabbeinu, the real shemen of mishcha. Or mefatim mis hashemen is if I try to replicate the shemen, that's a problem. There was a story once that somebody came to a rav and he's speaking about a certain guy. He said, this guy is such a Russia. He's over every one of these three kores, every single one. So the rav said, no, I can't be. So he says, no, every, so I'm telling you from A to Z, he's over everything. So the rav says, was he Sach B'Shem HaMishcha? Every is a kores. It's kind of hard to be violated. You can try really hard. It's hard to violate all these three kores. So in order to either have a kosher Shem HaMishcha, or to be in violation of Mefatim Shem HaMishcha, you have to know what the ingredients are. You got to know the recipe. So there's the sugyas. The Pasuk Chumash says, what does it say? V'yom Hashem Moshe kach lecha v'samim rosh. No, what does it say? Mar Doror, Mar Yedachya. That's the Gemara says. Remez l'mordechem in the Torah. Mar Doror, chamesh b'yos. V'kibon beseh machtiso, v'kido. The Pesukim give you exactly what the recipe is. So the problem is that we're not sure what one of the things is. So the Rambam in the 11th of the Maamar Koimus. So the Rambam writes in Halacha Aleph Mitzvah says a lasa Shem Ramishcha she amuchan ledvarim she tzricha mishicha boy. So he says lasa Shem Ramishcha. So if you have Moshe Rabbeinu Shemen around, so you use that. If you can't find it and you want to make a new Shemen, so you're allowed to make a new Shemen. You're supposed to. So the Rambam writes a kvasa Moshe Rabbeinu b'midbar. Moshe Rabbeinu already made the Shemen. What did he do? Lokach bin Hamor, Vakinamon, Vakida, Mikol Echod, Mishloshtan Chamesh Mio Shekel, Beshekel HaKodesh. It gives you the whole way to do it, how much you take, and how much you mix, and how much you grind up, and how much you cook, and Allah Zachin. And finally end up with the Shemen HaMishcha. So in Halachi Gimel, the Rambam identifies what these items are. Hamor is one of them. It says Mar Duror, so what is this Mar? It's the blood that's in this animal, this wild animal, in Hodu. Where did we say? Where did it say this? Where's the musk? What does it say?
India,
good. Hodu. Hodu v'yakush. Hayadu alakol. Everybody knows about this. This is a very, very popular perfume. And then he says, and what's a kinamon? It's something that comes from the islands off of India. Sherechel Tov, Miskam of Neodom. What do we think it is?
Cinnamon.
Vakidu Kosht. The Krebosim and Akalim Adakim, Kitevin Adam, Abom Iehodu. So the Rambam was well versed in the spice trade of the Middle Ages. It tells you exactly what one of the spices is. So the Rambam tells you that the spice of Mar Doror is musk. So you want to make a Shemen HaMishcha, Moshe Rabbeinu's got to go reach out to India and get somebody to bring it to him. So comes the Ravid on this Rambam, he says he doesn't believe it. Omer from Ein Daid Mekabelis, she consub of Maisya Hekka Kodesh, Dam Shum Chaya Ba'olam. Says, I don't believe that you're going to use blood of any animal in the world to make the Shemen HaMishcha, Shemen HaMishcha, hold the only thing for the Kengoda, for the Melech, for the Mishkan. You can use a blood. What is a non-kosher food? Hayitochen, that's going to be part of the Devar Mekadesh. Kosher dam chayet tameya. Why is it chayet tameya exactly? It's tamei. Well, what kind of, what do we say? It's, isn't it a deer? Yeah. No, from the deer family, antelope. I'm not sure what the Ravid meant with that. So the Ravid says that it can't be. It's not shayach. You can use treif for ingredients and in making this kodesh. Why exactly did the Ravid consider that to be so bizarre? You can use non-kosher ingredients. Why did the Rambam think that? Why did the Ravid think that was like so impossible? What was bothering the Ravid with that kasha? It was just like a hashkafa problem. Like the Rabbi Jenner's not masking the Rabbam because he didn't think it sounded nice and pretty. It's almost like the Rabbi had a problem in halacha. What did it smack of? Using a tray for ingredient in the Shevet HaMishra? There's a din that lehukshul lecha shemayim al orbeim atarbul vad, when you use different materials for holy things, they generally have to be kosher species. Let's say, Lamosh, when you write a Sefer Torah, so you have to write a Sefer Torah on cloth that comes from a kosher species of animal. It could be an Avela Trefa, but it has to be a cow, sheep, goat. It can't be a pig skin. It can't be an elephant skin. It's got to be from a min Tahor. So the Gemara says that din is not only true by writing Sefer Torah Tefillah Mezuzahs, it's true by other things that were used in the construction of the Mishkan. So the Gemara says in the Sechah Berachim Shabbos, that they used the tachashim. The tachash was a certain animal that appears in the Chumash. So the Pasuk says they used the or the tachash for the covering of the Mishkan. Or oros elim adamim, oros tachashim umala. So the skin of the tachashim and the skin of the elim adamim, right, the two different kinds of animal skins that were used as the ceiling, in a sense, for the Mishkan. There was a machlekes at Tanoim where they two different coverings. Means first they had a covering of one, then another, or the other, or no, it was they used the two interchangeably. They made one big one layer of a little bit of Elim Adam, a little bit of Tchashim. So whatever it was, the Oros Tchashim was part of the construction of the Mishkan. You needed Likuv. The Mishkan is not going to function without the Tchashim. So the Gemara's Shail and Shabbos was the Tachash kosher animal or not? Gemara's Shail. What's the din? It's Tachash kosher. So the Gemara says absolutely it was kosher. Not even a Shail. You know why? Because it is inconceivable that the Torah would have given us a mitzvah of building a Mishkan with non-kosher species of stuff. That doesn't work that way. So it states in the Gemara. What's the Mishkan? The musk what?
The musk comes from a deer. Which is a
kosher. Wait, we have to hold on. So there is such a din that the tachash had to have been kosher. What kind of animal is the tachash? It's hard to tell because it's a kosher species animal, but what's the problem? It's not on the list in the Chumash. The Torah tells us what all the kosher species animals are. It tells us there are three kosher species of behemoths and seven of chayas. And tachash is not one of them. So how come tachash is not on the list if it's kosher? So the Gemara quotes one opinion that says because it's extinct. It was only around for that one generation. It wasn't in the Doris. The Rebbeinu Shlomo made that animal for one generation only. Therefore, it was not part of the Torah. It's not part of Am Yisrael. We don't have to know whether it's kosher or not because it's never going to come up anymore. So the tachash was a one-time shot, and now it's extinct. And what did this tachash look like exactly? So the Gemara quotes one opinion of Masechet Shabbos that the tachash looked a little bit like a chai. It looked a little bit like a deer or an antelope or something. And Karen Achasarilo Bein Einov. It had one horn instead of two horns. Most animals have two horns. This had only one horn. That's what the tachash looked like. And it was nignas. It was only there for the whole purpose the Rebbeinu Shlomo created it was to build the ceiling of the Mishkan from, and that was it. And then the Rebbeinu Shlomo was gone. We never heard of it, never saw it again. So those who still remember the unicorn, so they got a glimpse of the tachash. So that's the stuff where in the secular world the notion of a unicorn came from, because the taka was a unicorn. At one time there was a unicorn. We call it a tachash. Anyway, back to our story. So the Ravid seemed to have had his eye on that Gemara. That the same way the Gemara says it's not shayach that you can have treifa skins in the Mishkan. The Ravid thought that was very bothersome. You can have dam in the Mishkan. You're making the Mishkan out of a dam product. Doesn't make any sense. And therefore the Ravid says that the Ram got it wrong. That's not what more is. Okay, so the pasuk says in describing the Rabban Shalom and Klal Yisrael, so the Pesukim described the give and take between the two beloveds, the two Dodim in Shir HaShirim is a mashal for Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam writes in the end of Hilchos Teshuva that all of Shir HaShirim is a mashal of Davar Zeh. That the Rambam writes that the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, like all other mitzvahs in the Torah, has a shir to it. Because I have to know how much matzah do I have to eat, and how many kailos do I have to eat for the shofar, how long my tzitz have to be, how big my tefillin have to be. So every mitzvah, every mitzvah has a shir. So there's a mitzvah of Avas Hashem. So how much? How do I measure? How do I quantify? Give me a practical shir. So let's say, imagine a yeshiva sends you a card in the mail. You have to have Avas Hashem this big. They send you a big cardboard card. You have to eat this much matzah. How do you measure Avas Hashem? Suffolk deraisa l'chumras. You have to have a big Avas Hashem. If you're not so from, then you're a little more modern. Understand? How do you measure Avas Hashem? So the Rambam writes, that's the shir of Avas Hashem is, you have to look for the most powerful, most encompassing love that a person has in this world. Whatever that is, it has to be more than that, because it has to be b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshcha. So you have to figure out a shir, how much is the most powerful emotional love that a person has. So the Rambam writes, that's avas ish le'ishta. That's the most powerful love between a husband and a wife. So the Rambam writes that the shir of avas Hashem is yoyse mizeh. And the Rambam says, and therefore there are dinim that are derived from this. This is not just like a Rambam Hilchos Teshuva, just like, you know, every Yom Kippur or something. This is a Rambam writing Halacha L'Maaseh. This is true all the time. So the Rambam says that, how does the love between Ish v'Ishto reflect itself? So the Rambam writes that a person really loves somebody, so they're always thinking about them. They always have the person on their mind. So the Rambam writes, that's how you have to have Avas Hashem, and even more. That's what the Torah says. Just as a person is kicholas ava ani, so he's always thinking about his beloved. So you have to always be constantly thinking about the Ribbono Shel Olam. So how do you do that exactly? How do you think about the Ribbono Shel Olam all day? You sit around like this all day like this. All day, have kumzitzes all day, and just sit and close your eyes and contemplate that. So that's not exactly what you're supposed to do. So that's what the Torah is calling. That's what the Sifrei writes on the next pasuk. Behaf the Shem Lekecha b'me oevo. How in the world is a human being supposed to perform? The shir is, so how are you going to do that? So the Rambam writes, the Sifrei writes, that's what the next pasuk says. Being Isaac of the Dvar Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us his word, his Torah, his Chochmah is the manifestation of himself in this world. We can't sit and contemplate the Ribbono Shel Olam. We don't even understand what we're thinking about. We sit and think about the Ribbono Shel Olam. But we can understand it, because Baruch Hu did give us the kelim intellectually to understand his chokhmah. So when a person is learning Torah, the Sifrei says, that's the ultimate key. So how much do you have to do that? That's exactly what the pasuk says. Whenever you're involved in anything in this world, you're thinking and learning, and you're learning, and you're chazering, and you're going to shir, and you're going to seder, and you're thinking to a suit. That is avos Hashem b'chol leib b'chol nefesh. That is the shir. So the Rambam writes at the end of that description of the mitzvah of avos Hashem. So the Rambam writes that kol shir hashirim mashul adavos zeh. That's why Shlomo HaMelech Baruch HaKodesh wrote Shir HaShirim. So he wrote it with a mashal, wrote it with allegories, describing a man and a woman who are in love with each other. So the whole Shir HaShirim was written with that mashal, because that's the way in this world we describe, that's the highest level of love that we could feel in this world. So that's why the Shir HaShirim was written by Zav Baruch HaKodesh, to use that as a model to show you what the Avos Hashem is really supposed to be. That's what the Rambam writes at the end of Hilchos Teshuva. That's why Chazal say that it's a terrible thing when people take Shir HaShirim out of context and people use it as a love song. They use it as a description of men and women in love with each other. He says that's a big bizayim to Shir HaShirim, because the whole goal of Shir HaShirim is to invoke that mashal and then to use that mashal to describe Avos Hashem. So if you sing the words of Shir HaShirim and you're thinking about the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, your mamash kol daydi nezabo, and you're thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and yeah. Like Baruch Bear, no? Who's in the shit in the old days? The Baruch Bear tapes? You guys don't remember? So a couple of years ago, they had these old, you were around those days? The Baruch Bear CDs? No, I used to quote them all the time. Somebody put together a few years ago from some old Tamidim or Baruch Bear, Rabbi Achbar apparently had a very, very beautiful voice. They say that he had a beautiful voice. And he used to see, like to sing in the yeshiva. They would have it Shal Shudis and Yom Tovim and that, you know, he would even besides Rani Mikhashmos and Yivamas, he also had a beautiful voice. So they had some old Niguna Rabbi Achbar that somebody actually put together in the CD. That the way they were sang in Kamenitz, you know, before the war, so they weren't exactly the most, you know, uppity, you know, modern day jazzy kind of stuff. They're these really, really heartfelt, you know, Tedes Hashem Tanimu Tedes. Oh, yeah, it was a little Hebrew, a little Yiddish, and a lot of oys. You know, it was really, it was geschmach. I used to love listening to them. My kids couldn't stand them, but I used to listen to them all the time. In the old cars, in the Free Antikadiris, when there were CD players in the cars, so I used to, now I still can't figure out how to get anything off my phone into the car. But then in the old days, I used to listen to Rav Baruch Ber CDs very, very often. So, I once lent them to Reverend Schechter. He asked me for them once. I was once talking to her about it, and she got very excited. I lent her some of the CDs. She also liked them very much. Like a reminder of Poland, in case you're ever in Poland. A reminder of life in the 1920s in Kamenitz. Anyway, so back to our story. So, yeah, that's what if you sing Shir Shirim like Rebbe Achbar did as an expression of Avos Hashem, that's okay. But if you sing Shir Shirim as thinking about your kala, thinking about your wife, that the Gemara says is very, very inappropriate. That's why it's not appropriate at all to walk down to Shir Shirim. None of the songs of Shir Shirim should be walked down to Chuppah. It's very inappropriate. In the old days, used to say walk down to Kol Dodi. Now people walk down to Basi Lagadi. It's not correct. One shouldn't be walking down to those things. Somebody told me, again, I don't know why I wasn't there. Somebody told me that the Rav was once in a chassid. They started to play Kol Dodi or something, and he told the guy to stop singing. And he told him, you can't walk down to Kol Dodi. The Rav had big shoulders. He could do that. I couldn't stop the Simcha line if he's playing, but big shoulders, you could stop. Okay. Anyway. So the bottom line is that the Rav quotes this Paskin Shir HaShirim. He says that in the Paskin Shir HaShirim, it says, Basi Lagani Achosikala, I'm coming to my garden, Arisi Murim Besami, and it uses the word more. Well, there aren't the antelopes with the deer musks running around in the garden. Obviously, it means Vumi min Esev or min Ilan v'recha neidev. It obviously is some kind of a grass or some kind of a tree or something which has a nice, beautiful smell. It's a vegetable, it's not an animal. It's a vegetable, not a mineral. So, Machlek is the Rama derived. What exactly this mysterious ingredient in the Shema Mishnah? It's a very important shayla. So, left to Celius of Lova, what's the thing going to be? We're going to have to make. The Gemara says that the Shemin of Moshe is going to come back to us. So when he comes back, we'll do some chemical testing on him. We'll ask Moshe Rabbeinu, what was it? Was it the deer musk, or was it some perfume coming out of some trees and grass or something? But the Rabbi says it can't be from the deer musk. It's not shayach, because it's not shayach if you have some trace ingredient in the Shemin. How come the Rambam wasn't like fazed by this problem? Either the Rambam didn't think it was a problem altogether, or maybe the Rambam held that it's kosher. Why is it kosher? It's nishtana. Maybe the Ram held like Rabbeinu Yonah. It's nishtana already. Once it's nishtana, it's mutar. So it could be that the machlekes, the Ram and the Rav, it tucked away in the beginning of Perek Aleph, the first halachas in Uvuchle Mikdash, about whether more in the Chumash Mar Dror was a deer musk, or whether it was some kind of something from the garden. So that machlekes may very well be the machlekes Rabbeinu Yonah and the Ramah repeating itself. It's possible. Do we have any rayas? Any rayas which way it goes? Whether Isish and Ishtan is mutter also? Any Gemara is anything? So there's a Gemara in the second of the Chayit. I don't think I put it on, right? Did I put the Magen Avraham on? I don't think I did. What? So there's a Magen Avraham that says, I'm going to be Mechuri. I have a Raya from the Gemara about Isish and Ishtan. It's a Raya. It's a Raya for the Gemara beginning of Maseches Bechairis. The Gemara is commenting on the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if you have a non-kosher species of animals, any milk that comes out of the non-kosher species is not kosher. I mean, I'll tell you, you're not allowed to eat it. Well, it's a propulsic, es ha-gomel, es ha-rabas, es ha-cholof. That's the reason why the Mishnah says in the Sechah Berchum of Avodah Zarah that you have to have milk that was seen by a Jew. When you milk an animal, so a Jew has to be supervising the milking process, because if it's a goy, how do you know the goy is giving you cow's milk? Maybe he's giving you pig's milk, he's giving you camel's milk. How do you know? So therefore, Chazal said, even though the overwhelming odds are it probably is cow's milk, but since there's a chance that maybe some pig's milk, maybe threw a little pig's milk in there, he was milking his cow to give you cow's milk, and then if he ran out, the cow stopped, and he feels bad, he wants to say a container of milk, so he runs over to the pig and takes out the last couple of drops out of the pig. So the odds of that happening are very, very unlikely. But Afa Bichain, Midir Rabbanan, they said, since it's possible, so Midir Rabbanan, they said that you have to have what's called Yisroel Re'ehu. That Cholav Shechov Nachri, Be'en Yisroel Re'ehu was treif. Midir Rabbanan, they made a gzeira, even though you're pretty sure that it's kosher, pretty sure it looks like cow's milk, you never know. And therefore, Midir Rabbanan, they made a gzeira that you're not allowed to drink that milk because Shema Irebel Dover Tomei. So Moshe Feinstein has his famous kula. We spoke about this, I think, in the past, where Moshe writes that the Lashon HaMishnah is you require Yisroel Re'ehu. You have to have a Jew watching the milking in order for it to be mutter. So Moshe says, whatever, I don't have a Jew standing there with a long white beard and standing and watching the milking, but the Jew has what's called Yediya. He doesn't have Re'ehu, but he has Yediya. So the Moshe dug up a Tosfos in Maseches Yevamos that says that one day Taisa says that even though you need a Re'ias Beis Din for a Geirus, okay, the Beis Din has to watch the Geirus, what if the Beis Din didn't actually see the Tevila, but they know that it happened? They have Mamish Yediya Vados, Polishim Sofek, there was a Tevila that took place. So Taisa quotes one opinion and says that's also good enough. Because whenever the Allah requires Re'ia, if seeing is believing, but believing is like seeing, it's if I really know it. Knowledge is like seeing, not believing. But if I Mamish know, with absolute certainty, it's like Anan Sade, it's as if we saw it ourselves. So Moshe writes that if I know with absolute, not even the latest asofik, that this is cow's milk. So Moshe says that it's cow's milk. You don't have to be worried. And the Issa D'Rabbanan doesn't apply. That's the equivalent of Yisroel Re'ehu. Re'ehu was lav dafka. So Moshe says if you have your DSA Yisroel, even though you don't have your ESA Yisroel, that is Chov Yisroel. People misquote Moshe. So Moshe said you don't have to drink Chov Yisroel. No, you didn't. Of course you have to have Chov Yisroel. The Mishnah says you have to Chov Yisroel. Not Chov Yisroel is treif. So Moshe redefined what Chov Yisroel means. Chov Yisroel doesn't mean a Jew seeing, a Jew knowing is also good enough. How does the Jew know? He has Ruach HaKadosh. How does he know that the milk, there's no chazen milk in there? So Moshe writes, if you live in a civilized country which has a good system in place to protect the safety of the milk supply, so the odds that somebody's going to tamper with milk and put some chazen milk in there is absolutely nothing, zero. Moshe said, the guy would get such a fine and there would be such a scandal, he'd lose his license and he'd be on the news. And it's not shayach. For what? Because he ran short on a couple of drops of milk. Says Moshe, it's a joke. First of all, Nobody raises pigs for milk anymore in America. And it's illegal to use pigs' milk. The whole thing is ridiculous, as Rabbi Shah. It's never, ever going to happen in America that somebody's going to mix in some pigs' milk into the milk supply. And therefore, we have a Yedias Yisrael that it's cow's milk, and or goat milk, whatever the kosher species of milk is, and Shalom Yisrael. And therefore, it's as if it's Chalom Yisrael. That was the famous Kula Rabbi Shah. And others disagreed with Rabbi Shah. There were those poskim who said, no, it's not true. That Chazal and Misakin, Re'ias Yisrael, Kach, that was the formulation of the Takana. If you don't have a Jew standing there and looking at the milk coming out, straif, midrabbanan, you can't drink that milk. So many are making like Rav Moshe Shuv, and Rav Moshe himself writes that if you're able to, you try to avoid it. But he writes that Mikra Din, it's really okay. So yesh, some are machbid, not to rely on this Rav Moshe, and many are making like Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Shuv only makes sense if you live in a place where there is taka supervision. So you go to some crazy country that doesn't have any reliable way of monitoring it, so then I probably wouldn't drink the milk there anyway for safety reasons. I probably wouldn't do anything there. I probably wouldn't be in those places. But in Jerusalem, you're in one of these crazy places, so you have to be careful. You can't just assume all milk was kosher. If you live in any normal kind of a country which is working with similar kinds of safety standards as America, so you can assume that that's okay. Anyway, get back to the story. So milk from a non-kosher animal is mamish treif. So the Gemara has the following discussion. What about milk from a kosher animal? How do you know you're allowed to drink milk from a cow? How do you know? So why would it be also? So the Gemara has two svaras, why it should be also. So one svar the Gemara says is, maybe it's treif, because it's a yotzim in a osur. Just as milk that leaves a camel is osur, milk that leaves a chazo is osur, milk that leaves a cow is also osur. Why? Because can you walk up to a cow and take a bite out of the cow? What's that called? Whatever it is, you're not allowed to eat an animal when it's alive. So all the milk that's coming out of the cow is a dover, it's a yotzim and osur. So why don't we say the same svar? But the same way that milk that comes out of a chazer is not kosher, yotzim and a chazer is osur, yotzim and a par should also be osur. That's the Gemara's kasher. It's the havamin of the Gemara. Then the Gemara says, you know what? have another reason why maybe milk should be also. Totally different reason, nothing to do with that svara. Totally different svara. What's the other svara? Gemara quotes Rabbi Meir, who makes some kind of a statement. It's hard to understand. Is this a biological observation? Is this a metaphysical observation? It's not clear exactly what this means, but it's called Dam Nekav Naaseh Cholov. That's the phrase of Rabbi Meir. That blood somehow is the building blocks of this milk that's coming out, and we view milk that's coming out of an animal as being almost like an extension of the blood. It's like it's the dam of the animal. Again, why that is physically, not physically, not another time and a place maybe, but the Gemara is such a svar that if you accept that svar of dam nekav naaseh cholov, so then all milk should be not kosher because eating the milk is the equivalent of eating blood. So the Gemara has two very, very good svaras to say that all milk should be treif. So what's the answer? So why is it kosher? Oy, oy, oy. Who here drank milk today? Who had cereal and milk this morning? Who had some milk in their coffee this morning? A lot of people have. Who had yogurt for lunch? Pizza, anything? So you all have milk. So how can you drink milk? All the milk is treif because it's yotzim and also because it's dam. So what's the answer? Anyone know? Torah says, Eretz avas chalav udvash. The Rebbeinu Shem tells Moshe Ben Atel Klal Yisrael, you come into the land of flowing of milk and honey. The milk is treif. Come on. That's how you advertise. If you're advertising a tourist attraction, come and enjoy the milk that you can't use because it's treif. Come on. Eretz avas chalav udvash. That would be a terrible, terrible advertisement for Eretz Yisrael. It's almost as bad as the Israeli government's symbol, the symbol for the Ministry of Tourism. Anyone know what it is? Yeah, it's two guys carrying a pole with grapes on the bottom. That's the Ministry of... Who, what, Nikabub thought of that? That was the worst tour in the history of the Jew. We're still suffering from the Churban because of the tour of the Meraglim. That became the symbol of the Ministry of Tourism. I don't know what moron thought of that at some point. Anyway... Rabbi say, so the Rebbeinu Shem says, Eretz Yisrael is levas chalav udvash. Obviously, the milk is kosher. One of you guys asked me a kasha. Don't you see from here that honey is kosher also? What's the answer?
That's date honey.
That's not dvash of honey. That's not the bee's honey. So milk must be kosher. So the Gemara says, we can breathe a sigh of relief that milk is kosher. If not for this diyas hakosov, all milk would have been non-kosher, either because of dam or because of yaitz bin osam. So let's stop for a second. I want to analyze, not the maskana, I like milk, I want to analyze the havanina. In the world pre the Gzeres HaKosov, there would have been a very strong, the Rebbeinu Shlom had advertised us that the milk is mutter, if not for Gzeres HaKosov, milk would be usher. Why? Because two reasons, either yatsim and usher, or because of dam. No one's bakasha.
Dam, it's a
shima. It's so nishtana. It's unbelievable. It looks legitimately different. You ever get your blood drawn? take two test tubes, okay? Get some blood drawn, put it into a cup, take a look at it, and then go to the fridge and place up a cup of milk. And look, looks the same. What did the Gemara say? If not for the Gzeres HaKosov, what would the din have been? Would have been usur. The fact that's the shtana, azma, what's the difference? Who cares? That's the Magen Avraham's kasha. Magen Avraham says, "Araya brura." From that Gemara, from the Havamina, only the Magen Avraham would have known that. You got to be like a Magen Avraham. You have to remember there's a Gemara in Bechoris. You have to remember the Vav in Bechoris. You have to remember the Havamina Shema Havamina. It's not even true. The Maskana, it's wrong. The Maskana, the milk is kosher. But in one wild Shema wild Shema wild Havamina, there was such a possibility that the milk should be usur because it came from dam, notwithstanding the fact that it's nishtana. Zabin from the see from here, the issue of nishtana is a problem. So the achrayim try hard to deflect this raya. It's not so simple how to deflect this raya. There are ways to answer this raya. So this is a real shayla. This is serious stuff. We have the shayla all the time. We have all kind of stuff, all kind of ingredients that go into foods that have their roots in treifa ingredients. And they've undergone so many chemical changes and mycelium and enzymes. A billion things have happened to them. And then all of a sudden, we want to know, are they kosher, they treif? So if you hold that Issa Shanishtana is mutter, as long as it doesn't look like anything like the previous item, so it's mutter. If you say that there is no such cloud as kashrus, there's a din of shini kunin gazela. Maybe there's a din of shini and brachas, but in Hilchos kashrus, there is no absolute ironclad rule that all these surim, just because they undergo a change, are mutter. A little bit of a unclear. It's interesting, that Gemara, in Bechayrus, the Gemara has a Havamina that all milk should be treif, because it came from Dam. So the Chazon Ish has a fascinating kash in that Gemara. There's a Mishnah at the end of the second Berachah Maseches Nida. The Mishnah says that we have a tradition, Rabbi Elochai Moshe Mesinai, that not all blood that comes out of a woman's body, even if it comes out of the uterus, it automatically makes her into a Nida. It's only considered to be Dam if it falls into one of the unique categories of colors of Dam. Just being biologically Dam is not enough to make the woman Asura. It has to be what we call from the five Maros of Dam. The Mishnah spells out there are five different shades of coloring that make the Dam halachli Dam. Four of those colorings are red, the different shades of red, and the fifth is black. The verse says the black blood is basically red, just lost oxygen, the Dam Admur Shaloka. But out of the basic rule is it has to be a shade of red. And then the Gemara goes on to say that it has to be a very, very specific shade of red. And the Gemara gives you different ways of measuring it, different ways of evaluating it. It's as red as this kind of wine diluted with this amount of water. And the Gemara gives all kind of different shiurim that we have. That's what the Gemara says at the end of the second parak of Nida, that by the days of the Amoraim, they couldn't even figure out anymore. Many Amoraim couldn't even figure out how to tell the difference. The differences between Dam that's tar and Dam that's tummy is so minute, it's so difficult to tell. So many Amoraim stopped looking at Dam anymore. They just push couldn't, they didn't have a Masorah, they didn't have that expertise to be able to tell Ben Dam La Dam. So the Rush writes that Bizman Hazeh, we don't look anymore at shades of red. If it's red, it's red. And no one today is going to say, oh yeah, it's red, but it's okay, because it's not really red. It's a little bit off. What we do Bizman Hazeh is we look at differences between red and other colors. Say a woman presents a Shaila, it's not even red. It's yellow, it's brown, it's gold. It's a different color of Gamre. So then you need an expertise. You need a little bit of a practice to learn what's called red, and when, you know, is this orange? Is this really red? Is this pink? Is this red? Is this brown? Is this rusty brown? Is this considered to be any red at all? But once we've identified that it has red, then nobody has childhood. When nobody looks and says, well, it's not one of the four official colors of red, and therefore it's okay. So the color red is critical in Hilchos Nida. So says the Chazon Ish, so how could milk have been a problem? It's not red, it's white. So even if it's blood, it's white blood, it's not red blood. So even al atzad the havamina that the milk takes on the characteristics of the blood that it came from, but it lost the color. So if it lost the color, it's not blood anymore. So Chazdish says, what do you see from this Gemara? That klal of red versus other colors is not a din in kol tarakula of dam. It's only a din in what? It's a pran, nuchas nida. It's a very unique detail given to Meshaman and Hukhaz Nida, has zero relevance in any other areas of Halacha. It's called Dam, no matter what, whether it's red, pink, purple, white, it doesn't matter what it is. If it's biologically Dam, it's Dam, it doesn't matter what the color it is. The only time color plays a role is only in Hukhaz Nida. So this Chazon Ish was important. There was a Shaila years ago about, there was someone to come up with a wild Akula in Hukhaz Chayvah B'Shabbos. There's a, you're not allowed to draw blood on Shabbos. So, what's the malach exactly to make somebody bleed on Shabbos? So, different opinions of Rishabbos. Rabbi Natam says that the reason why you're not allowed to be chayvel on Shabbos is because it's the tilas neshama. It's tantamount to like shechtik, like taking a person's life. So, taking an animal's life. Shechit is one of the tilas neshama, one of the lamates malachas. So, I just took a little bit of dam. Why is that called the tilas neshama? So, Rabbi Natam says, ki adam wa nefesh. Because since the Torah always calls Dam Nefesh, so Mali Kol Nefesh, Mali Biksa Nefesh, even taking a little bit of the Nefesh, drawing a little bit of the blood, is considered to be a Malach Deraisa Tilas Neshama. So there's someone wanted to argue, what would the din be? Let's say if I draw something out of the person's body, but and I take some blood out, but I don't take the red part of the blood. I only take the other color. So blood is made up of a lot of parts. There's red blood cells, white blood cells, and plasma. There's a lot of different parts. So what if I run a blood test and I only take out the white part of the blood? I don't take out the red part of the blood. So then maybe that's not called the tilas neshama because it's not kiadam one nefesh. So you're probably wondering how you're going to do that exactly. So the answer is you're not going to. You're going to take the whole blood out, but you don't really care about the rest of the blood. So the rest of the blood, maybe it's a psikreish lo nichale. Very, very lomdish question. So according to the Chazon Ish, this whole thing didn't even get first base. Because according to the Chazon Ish, that dam and kol tarakula is even if it's white. The white blood is also called dam. The quirk of red versus other colors, that's a unique din. Din prati only in Hilchas Adida. So the Chazon Ish is Raya Brewer from that Gemara Maseches Bechorus. Anyway, getting back to our story. So the bottom line is that we have this funny musk over here. And we know that it's a nice, sweet-smelling something or other. And we're trying to figure out, by the way, is it kosher? So of all strange places, this is where it appears in the Gemara. So this is where there have been Yon, and the Rosh, the Raman, the Shulchan Aruch, everyone topples about the Shaila is an Issa Shedishtana Mutranan. So according to those who will make it, so then all these kind of funny ingredients that we have that had their roots in Trefa stuff, if it doesn't have any resemblance anymore to the Trefa origin, all these things will be Mutter. And if the old Issa Nishtana remains also, so it's a problem. So we're not so quick to be makers. The Shav Deraisis, we don't usually take that very cavalier attitude that, well, once it was Chazav, but now it looks like, looks like an apple, so then it's Mutter. No, we don't take that attitude. We're not so sure what the answer to that question is. And we're going to have Ram thought that the simple reading of the Gemara B'chayra seems to point in the direction of the Machmirim. And strangely enough, this Machlokes may impact on the Ram Deraiv in the beginning of the Chazav Mikdash. Okay? All right, we'll wrap it up for now. Okay, we'll start the new sugya tomorrow. All right, everyone get ahead of the... You guys get started, you give a tuffle. Okay, good. We'll pick it up tomorrow.